address number 16721, Greg Reel 8.
Greg Reel 8. We were still talking about Kohima and the supplies. Were some of the supplies dropping into the Japanese lines as well?
Well, obviously the parachutes and that, they drifted. We all, you imagine the
Have you any other memories, personal memories of Kohima? What you saw, what you were doing yourself?
Well, as I say, we got reinforcements, Navy lads, beards, all that, and of course, right, get that beard off, and but we were sitting, about 6 o'clock at night, and these reinforcements come up, and they were saying, Ned, that's all I got in the army, Ned. Ned, there's a young lad asking for you here, And he comes up, and it was my cousin, Bobby, from Chestermore. And, of course, he got a pot of tea and that, and he was able to call an hour. When right lads up, and he had joined big company, and they were going to put a they were moving up in the position, they were going to put an attack in at dawn, And that was it. I never seen Bobby anymore.
He was killed there.
He was missing.
You mentioned Navy lads there. Where were they coming from?
Well, probably from way back, Bombay and these places.
Were they Marines or what?
Well, there's a mixture of all, anything.
And they came in as infantry?
They come in. They must have been trained, so much trained. Well, any serviceman, you do your basic training in the Navy, the similar, which helps you,
And a number of them arrived as reinforcements.
Plus the fact, when you join the army, lying load and all this, or your rifle open, this business, 1 year in action, that's the last thing. You just hit the deck. You get under a blade of grass, quicker than you. And it's like cowboys and Indians. You adapt.
Were you dug into slit trenches in the positions you were in?
Oh, yeah. Well, you just scratched a hole to get in. I mean, you were shelling us back, back. And,
as I was going to ask you, were you under fire yourselves?
Oh, yes, aye. Our artillery was just behind us. Of course, you got occasions when they were shelling us, when out for the ammunition, Boom.
From your own artillery.
That's it, aye. And there's one occasion, in Kohima, there, got some examination up, and it was faulty, it wouldn't fit. And a chap was coming in, and the lads you've interviewed have probably mentioned this.
Did you see? I was told that some ammunition was actually brought up by the ambulances to pick the wounded up and go back. Did you actually see that?
No, I never seen that. Never seen that.
The medical services, how close were they to the...
The medics were there all the way. In fact, they used to be going in front of our lines to get our lads back. They'd done a wonderful job. There's a book you can get at the museum about the 2nd Battalion. And it's good reading in there.
Did you see the Padres in action at all?
Oh, yes, I. We had, well, Paddy was Paddy Rice. And he was getting the lift up one time with me and Brent Curry, you know, and he was a tallish fella. And his legs were like, boom shot, thin, you know. And he's had his legs out, and I was getting hold of his leg for the gear lever, you know. And he was a church man. We had our services in the open. But he had his revolver out and he was cursing and blending like the next man. And no shame in it. There's no shame in it because what you're seeing.
Fear. How was that showing itself? Were you frightened?
I have prayed to God many times, and he used to answer me prayers. But, like the VCs, you know, the things that they've done, when you read them, you know, it's panic like. It's, and when what you'll do, and you do something, you do automatically do these things. And, great, it's worked, but it could bounce back and you're not there, you know. No, it's fear, panic. This causes men to do things, because it's a case of kill or be killed. If you're in an aeroplane, you know, or even at a ship, on a ship.
In your own situation and in others, of course, under intense pressure and danger that you're in Kohima and other places, what is it that do you feel that actually makes you stay rather than run off?
Well, this is like fellowship in the forces in war. You know, you'll give your life for the man next to you, or any man that's in danger, and it's this fellowship. You are like brothers, and it's wonderful. And this is something you don't get, even in the peacetime. It's not the same. Yeah. In this fellowship,
does discipline come into it as well, you know, in your training and so
on? Oh, yeah, well, this is it, like, your training.
How important is the officer to you in these situations?
Well, he's...
Are you watching him? Are you?
He's another father to you, you know. And he's been trained up to look after men. A good officer, the men will die for him, you know, you're safe.
Did you see any officers in the Kohima situation who, again, just like some of the men, cracked under the pressure?
No. I mean, Kohima, the first night attack, the battalion, they lost a CO and about 13 officers. It was this... snowball grenades and stuff like this, you know.
Who was CO at the start of the action?
Oh, was it Theobald? No, Theobald. Yeah, I can't.
But he was killed, you say. Who took over?
I haven't a clue, you know. From then on, well, could be anybody. If your centre forward gets a knockdown, get a back and come out, the goalie can come out, and, you know.
In the night action, you say that they did when they first went in. Were you actually watching?
Oh, no.
I don't mean in the sense of like a football crowd, but the signs and the noise.
Where we were was the hillside. You couldn't. All the fighting was up on the tops.
They were above you.
Above us, yeah. You heard them. The guns going and...
Is there a lot of screaming and shouting? Do you hear?
Not a great lot. You got the... I mean, you ever find on the hill, say the road was about half up, then there was about 500 foot drop. And there's one occasion where tanks, to get elevation, had backed over their dunes. And they're firing, boom, boom. And the sort of ones went rolling down, and the lads are lucky. They got out.
They backed onto the slope.
On the side of the road to get the elevation for the guns. It was a big fight on rooftops, you know. They dragged the, giving out, they dragged a 5.5 gun up, big heavy gun. They dismantled it and took it up in bits and they put it together and were firing, like from here across the street into a Jap bunker. Point blank, boom, boom, boom. Right, lads. As soon as the first man was over the top, Jap was still banging away. You know, this is the. When you see them, they all had drugs on them. You know,
all had drugs.
Drugged up. And they're told if you're caught, you'll be killed. The odd prisoners, well, the prisoners even coming in, they were shaking like this.
I thought you were going to kill them.
Kill them, you know.
But I've heard this before, that they were found with drugs on their
body. That's it, Then you got these, apart from the Japs, you got these, who were a nuisance was these Gyps, an Indian National Army that the Japanese had formed, and they were like pioneers who worked on the roads and things like this. And of course these fellas, they were giving ourselves up, and they just walked, just a loincloth on, you know, putting their hands up, but they were a nuisance. And when any of the lads, they come near out of the bush, you know, we used to chase them.
They were nuisance in what way?
Well, they used to come in and they were wanting food and stuff like this, but they were the enemy as far as we were concerned. And you could have shot them down, and you know, nobody wanted them.
Did you see many or any Japanese prisoners taken at Kohima?
No, not Kohima. Farther on, down. Imphal, as I said, it was 100 mile, and that 100 mile there was two or three big stops where there's battles, and about the last 20-odd mile it was an armoured column that went through. And
but you'd been pulled off at Kohima when it was over and went back to Dimapo and got your new drafts, you were saying?
Oh, that's it.
Where were the drafts coming from?
Well, reinforcements from probably other regiments or other reinforcement camps back in India, you know.
What state is a man in, or the battalion, the survivors of the battalion in? What does a man want immediately a battle is over and he's survived? What's the first thing he seems to think of? I'm thinking in terms of, is it a good meal, is it sleep, or what have you?
Well, I think it's 24 hours with your head down, not being interrupted, you know, quiet.
And did this happen? Were you allowed that kind of time when you were pulled out?
Well, you just slept in bashas or anywhere. You get your head down, and you knew, well, for 24 hours, well, you're safe, sort of business.
When you got your drafts, what happened to you after that?
Well, that's when Kahima was cleared and they start pushing down the road. After the fighting, after the Dev and that start moving down the road to Imphal, then the divisional workshops and all that opened up. But at Kahima, the Naga head tyrant, headhunters, you know, go in the villages and there's the huts with little heads in and things like that, you know. But they used to come and work with the men on the roads, the women, you know, oh, there's some biggish women. We used to say, you want to watch me, they'll whip you away, the women whip me away in the bushes and things like this, you know. But they built a war memorial at Kahima, and that was built while we were still fighting. And the Naga tribespeople, they brought their granite and stuff from the hills. And in the divisional workshops and that, all the stonemasons and that, they made this while the Dev was still pushing on. And every man Jack in the division, there was so much kept out of his army money to go into a fund to maintain this. And it's still going today, and there's money still in the kitty from them days to keep it, you know.
And this memorial, when it was completed, was officially dedicated.
Oh, yes.
Were you there at that
dedication?
No.
Just the divisional workshops, who I'm back all the time, you know.
As you advanced down the road, you say the Japanese were now pulling out and retreating.
Mm.
What was your position in this movement?
Well, we were carriers. I keep saying carriers. There was very, very little motor jeeps. There was no room for the tanks off the road. You're stuck on the road, you know. And you come to a place where, you know, chap had made a stand and the road winding the road and odd places was being shelled, and they wanted supplies taken up to the battalion, like any corrugated sheets or anything like that, you know, anything to put over, because it was starting down in monsoon.
Well, the rains had come now, hadn't they?
And you went up, of course, you had your head down, and get the battalion. You knew different, oh, around this corner, I'm safe, and you're around the next corner, well, keep there, you know.
Were the rifle companies marching?
Well, they were advancing.
On foot. And what your job was to supply them, was it? Well, your own personal job.
Eh?
What were you doing personally?
Well, the mortars, they moved mortars and they took up positions to support the battalion. Then the carriers, you were put on any necessary work, you know. See, the workers, they were taking a patrol, our armoured patrol, and they wanted more carriers. We would go and join them, you know.
Did you do some patrolling yourself at the head of the column?
Oh, not at the head, but near enough. Now, as I say, when we got down to Imphal, about 20-odd mile from Imphal, they were going to push straight through to link up Imphal in those tanks, carriers, then another tank, you know, this business. And the carriers at Dimapur, well, before Dimapur, was when we were on the landings, they put seats on the side, hinged, you know, for troops that dropped down, and you got about six or seven lads on each side sitting to ferry them. And these come in great. in the jungle. And this armoured patrol through to Imphal, there was a carrier, and lads on the back, you know, and there's one time we come slap in a village, and there was chaps there, and the lads off, and that, and they were banging away, and you were sitting there, and you know, at the start up, switch on, or, you know, then the tanks were banging, and then all cleared up, and right, back, start up, and away down the road again.
So your job primarily was driving that carrier?
Oh, yes, I.
And everybody would drop off, leave you.
That's it.
Waiting for your next task.
I was getting back with the mortars. They start mounting them in the front. I'll tell you about now. This happened. It was round about Imphal, and the column was moving down, and the brigadier, the second in command, he come up, mortars. And we on the hilltop, he had spotted Japs. And he, right, get the gun in, and we'll line it up and that, and he give the orders, you know. And within minutes, you know, was mounted in the front. You just line up your carrier straight away. And that was it, hand, you know, boom, boom, and they put the smoke out and pump in the middle, right, bang, 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 bang. And when you're moving down the roads, this is what was happening. You know.
And you had a mortar next to you at Grad,
was mounted in the front.
Was there any real danger for you, personally? Were you in a situation where you could have been ambushed or fired on?
When you went into trees and that, you had to look that way, you had to look this way, you know.
And look up into trees.
It was. And the drivers always seemed to get, you know.
A carrier is somewhat vulnerable, isn't it, from up behind?
Nothing on the top,
nothing on the top,
yeah. So, if you went over a mine, like, that's it, yeah.
Were you able to at least make a guess, an educated guess, that a mine was ahead of you? Were there ways of recognising?
You might be lucky and get a glimpse of something, but yeah, you just plowed straight through.
Were the roads heavily mined by the Japanese as they pulled back?
Oh, not a great lot. The bridges, they were blown to bridges, and this is where you had to, if it was too steep to crawl over, you know, then you got the tanks going, the engineers, and they put the bridge over, you know, on the tank, and it lifts off it. Things like this.
Were the Japanese leaving suicide troops, for want of a better word, behind as the main body pulled off?
Yeah, you got the Japs that dig a hole in the road, and the Jap would be sitting with a shell, you know, and when anything went up over the top, we just jabbed it up, suicide, you know, things like this.
Did you see any action like that? Did you see anything go?
Never seen anything like go, not through that, but this is...
You've been told to watch for.
And the Japs had been caught in the hose. Of course, it didn't get out the hose because the lads just, you know, you get the lads advancing and there's a Jap line. I wonder if he's dead. You know, a lot of them used to fake it, like yourself. You'd play a dog war. I wonder if he's dead, you know. Boom.
And to make sure, anyway.
Because it came as well. There was cases of all lads were being buried up to the necks, you know. And of course, some of the lads were starting doing the same. And on the news, the Japs were calling for the Churchill's butchers, you know. But what they did to you, you're doing it back, and they didn't like it, you know.
These are British prisoners that had been taken by them and were mutilated.
Well, lads that were being caught, you know, in action.
Did you actually see any people that suffered that way?
No, because any lads that suffered that way, well, they never come home.
But the message coming back to you as you were fighting the Japanese was that they were behaving in this way.
That's it. Well, it was.
And you took revenge.
Oh, when you were seeing anything like that, well, you know, you just hit the roof.
They tended, of course, not to give themselves up, certainly in the main stage of the war, but... when they did you ever witness anyone who shot a prisoner down?
No.
What happened to you now? You're going, as you say, advancing down to Imphal.
We got down to Imphal, from Imphal, which was relieved then, like, you know. And from there we went through Imphal in the place Tamu. And the Japs had a hospital there, you know, and there was some of the Jap wounded that were in a terrible state. And they couldn't be helped, you know, and I think they were put to sleep, like. And from Tamil, this is when we start moving down to Mandalay.
Was the terrain changing?
Oh, yes, it was... getting down towards Mandalay, it was getting flatter still. Some kind of hills, right? But we crossed the Chinmen, the river.
Was it opposed to your crossing?
No. The advance troops had cleared that, and the Aries had put a big Bailey bridge across, you know. And... then we start moving down to Mandalay. Now, at Mandalay, where the Japs were, this is where, to get across the river, and there's places it was about a mile and a half wide in some places, and to kid the Japs on that we were coming straight over the river from them, you know. The second day, they were given a job to kid them on, you know. And they had us in the carriers, tarpaulins trailing on the dust and kicking dust open, you know, to kid the Japs on that, oh, they're going to make the crossing here. And this is when we first experienced. He had some French 75 artillery guns in the, you know, you heard the gun go and you knew in seconds the shell was there. Near enough, the bang of the gun and the shell was, this is the French, good gun. And we would up and down his bloody tracks. And crack, you know, either side they were in that. And eventually, they made the crossing farther down because they were in these canvas boats. There's a regiment of Gurkhas crossed over and they got shot up, and there's loads drowned, you know, with these canvas boats, but eventually they got a foothold. And there was an Indian division farther down. They got over and come round. Then there was the Lido Road, there's troops coming down that end, because the whole fronts were beginning to move then.